Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Morning, everybody. Dermot Whelan in for Oliver today. Text 51551. You can WhatsApp us on 0870 32 32 32. You can drop us an email to oliver@rte.ie. Time now for our first guest. And Irish chefs have gone far and wide at home and abroad to achieve remarkable success, in fairness, in the kitchens of some of the world's finest restaurants. And one woman from Kilnall in County Tipperary is a rising star in the London food scene, where she is head chef at a Michelin-starred restaurant called Chishuru. Christine Walsh spends some days on her feet for 15 hours in the high-paced, high-pressure kitchen and has spoken frankly about sexism in the industry. Her Instagram handle is Bogger Chef, and she joins me now from BBC Broadcasting House in London during a rare bit of downtime during her busy job. Christine Walsh, good morning.
Good morning, Dermot. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Am I right in thinking that Kilnall in County Tipperary, where you're from, is where the Derren Y Flan chalice emerged from the soil many years ago?
Well, close enough to it anyway, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that incident made me want to do archaeology. That and Raiders of the Lost Ark. But the image of the chalice coming out of the ground with all the jewels on it, it just sticks with you.
I suppose so, yeah. You'd find a lot of things in that bog, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe some things that should stay there. Yeah. So what is on the menu for tonight, or is it something that you think about?
Well, for Chishuru, it's very much a... I think the food is not usually what a lot of people that I would know would eat, but it's definitely something I would urge people to try. But I suppose for menus, it's very much a collaboration between myself and the owner and exec chef, Jockey Bacare. Mm. So everything kind of goes from, I have nothing really to compare it to because it is West African food. I don't really get that much around Kilnall. So we talk about things quite a lot. She'll tell me what, basically what it was like for her growing up and the flavours. And then I'll kind of take some of those flavours and we develop things and we come up with some nice dishes. Lots of spice, lots of chilies, scotch bonnets, lots of layering with onions to give sweetness. It's very interesting.
Did you ever think you'd end up with West African food being one of your specialities?
It wasn't even in my orbit. No, I didn't. I wouldn't say it's a speciality, but it's definitely something I'm a lot more knowledgeable about now.
Yeah, we obviously must like a challenge and to be taking on all these new flavours, new skills, all this, I mean, this history and culture embedded in all these meals, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, I love a challenge, especially when where food is concerned. I've always kind of had an interest in anthropology and culture, especially where it revolves around food. So to get an opportunity to work in the middle of a West African restaurant, kind of at the top of its game, is I'm very fortunate to get that opportunity. Yeah.
Did you travel to Nigeria to explore some of these dishes?
Yeah, we did. When just before I started, I was told that I'd be brought to Nigeria. And you know, when you start jobs, sometimes they'll say we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and you don't really believe it. You kind of right, this is their selling point, but I didn't actually think that we were going to go to Nigeria. And then 2 months later, I was standing in the middle of Lagos, which was great. I had my own bodyguard for the whole time that I was there. So it was good. Yeah, I loved it. I'd go back in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And did you see any parallels between the Irish and the Nigerians in terms of cooking or family or how they treat food?
There is a connection between, well, obviously, with African nuns and stuff going out there. I've been told a lot about how nuns have gone to different parts of Africa to kind of help out. Mm. And there's a huge Irish influence there. Guinness especially. Nigerians love their Guinness, and as do I. So that was a very emerging topic. But apart from that, like, it's... When you get there, it's kind of a sensory overload. You know, you're standing in these markets in 38 degree heat, and it's just full of food and thousands of people. It's quite a lot, but you're trying to take in so much at once. It's hard to compare at that stage because I've never been in those situations before.
Yeah. I love the fact that you can take, you know, food like West African food and it can be part of a Michelin starred restaurant to be the focus of the diners and everything that you're creating in the kitchen. I think it's a sign of just one of the benefits of living in a big capital city, that you have this variety and access to food. It would be so much harder to do that in Ireland, I would guess.
I mean, in smaller areas of Ireland, yeah, of course, because there's not a huge variety of like thousands of different cultures. But in places like Dublin, Galway, Cork, you'd definitely have a bit more of a way in to kind of see different foods and different food cultures. But London, yeah, God, it's like a haven for people that are just obsessed with different foods. It's great. It's hard to choose sometimes because there's nearly too much choice.
Yeah, yeah. There's usually a family influence when it comes to things like this. Was it your grandmother who got you into cooking?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say she got me into it. I was kind of welded to her from a very young age. So I would be kind of, I'd have my toe in every pot that she'd have on the cooker. Yeah, she had a massive influence on me deciding that I wanted to be a chef. You know, when I was in like early 90s, my first tastes of like mangoes and avocados and kumquats were in her kitchen in Killinall, which were, I didn't think that was a rare thing, but in hindsight, it really was. She'd go into a supermarket and like the exotic fruit section and pick up these random things. And I used to be so interested watching her just kind of figure it out and delve into them. And it really stuck with me.
Yeah, it's lovely. It just sort of embeds itself there, almost like a computer virus in a good way. Like sometimes we take it on board and then it's not going to emerge for, you know, maybe until years later. Because you didn't go straight into chefing or cooking, did you?
No, I didn't. I went to UCC after school. I had intended on being an English and geography teacher, but to be honest, I don't even think I had that much interest in it. I wanted something more out of just sitting in a lecture hall or just standing in a classroom. I wanted to learn more about people and cultures and food. And I eventually did a course in WIT. And then I realized that I was actually pretty good at this. And so I stuck with it.
Yeah. What did you do in Waterford Castle?
Well, I started my career there. I was a commis chef there. Mm. It was a man by the name of Tony Barry in WIT. I think he must have seen something in me. Great fella. He called me out one day and said, "Right, I'm going to bring you out. I want you to meet somebody." And so the next thing, like, I had never heard of Waterford Castle. I didn't know you had to get on a ferry to get out there. I didn't know what was going on. So the next thing, he drove his car onto a boat and my mother rang me and,
"Where are you?" "Oh my God, I'm emigrating.
I'm on some boat with my lecturer. I don't know where we're going." She's like, what? "You're on a boat? What?" And then he brought me out and then he introduced me to this chef, Mick Quinn. And then kind of Mick took me under his wing and I worked at the castle for, I'd say, nearly 5 years. But I learned, nose to tail was something that we were doing before it even became like a popular thing in kind of current kitchens, you know.
What's nose to tail? Is that on a spit?
Like you get in like whole animals, and it's whole animal butchery, and you break down the whole thing and utilize the whole animal instead of just getting bits and pieces. It's a far more sustainable way of cooking,
of course,
especially
yeah.
if you're dealing with the farmer directly.
Yeah. Did you ever cook pigs on a spit?
I did, yes, I did. That was part of my job for a while. I thought it was just a regular thing that people did, but apparently it's not. I used to have to get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, go get the ferry over to the castle, figure out how to get this massive pig onto a spit for a wedding for like 80 people that night. So I'd have to like throw it into a black sack and into a wheelbarrow and wheel it out to the front of the castle and try and stick it up in a spit. It's very, very hard labour, I have to say.
Yeah, well, I think people look at it and think, sure, that's, you know, just grab a sweeping brush in one end, out the other, lob it up on the fire and away we go.
Yeah.
But I guess there is a lot more to it. Plus, I mean, the fact that as Irish people, you know, barbecuing one sausage terrifies us that we're going to give ourselves salmonella. I can just imagine the cries of, "Is it cooked in the middle? Is it cooked in the middle?"
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd have to, you know, I'd have to look after that that whole setup for about 10 hours, and I'd go home stinking a campfire.
Yeah, I know, it's a bit of an ordeal. But of course, your journey took you to London and actually to other places too. And I'm fascinated with this. You did go on to work in a Michelin star restaurant such as Noma, which is in Copenhagen in Denmark. And it was, there was a nod to this in the series The Bear, if people are fans of that famous award-winning series about chefs in a kitchen. And you worked there, and you would imagine that that would have to be the pinnacle of your career at that point, that you're going to work in a Michelin star restaurant with some of the most creative and famous people in the world. What was that experience really like?
I mean, it was, I had applied to work at Noma for, I'd say, a week, every week for a couple of years. And now, before I went there, I'd also worked in a 3-star in San Francisco called Bennu. So I was familiar to the kind of work and all that. But when I got there, I think maybe it was my own kind of social awkwardness that I felt like I just didn't, I couldn't get the vibe of it. And it was devastating because, you know, the people, it was a nice place. You know, there was nothing sinister about the place. It was, they were really kind of into what they were doing. But I just couldn't, I just feel like I couldn't get a hold of it. And, you know, it happens, you know, some kitchens you go into, like anybody, like any job, sometimes you think you like it and you will like it and then you don't.
Yeah.
But it was really devastating for me. I was devastated that I didn't love it. And I nearly left chefing after that because I thought that I had gotten the best opportunity a chef could get. And I messed it up because I didn't love it. So it was to go back to the drawing board.
Did that highlight something for you, I guess, now as someone, you know, who runs a Michelin star restaurant, you know, when you're the boss?
Yeah.
Did it show you the importance of the team nature, the gelling of the people there, the vibe, for want of a better word?
Yes,
but actually, it's the stuff in and around the chefing and the meal preparation and the men dreaming up menus, that actually it's the less tangible stuff that maybe has a lot more importance than we realize.
Yes. Very much so. Like when I thought that I had to give up chefing because that wasn't the job that I wanted, I really had to think about how I wanted to be a chef and how I wanted to be as a chef in kitchens. And that's kind of how I had to look at it instead of just giving it up altogether, because this is my life. It's been my life for 20 years. It's my career. It's in my bones at this stage. Working in good and bad kitchens has given me a view on how I want to run my kitchens. And yeah, it does. It becomes very transparent in the end.
You wrote a piece recently about sexism in the industry, and I guess this ties into what we're talking about, the kind of atmosphere you want to create, the respect between colleagues. What has been your experience over the years of elements of like sexism working in kitchens?
When I started first, I didn't really... Sexism wasn't a word that was ever used. Nobody ever talked about it. Nobody ever used that word sexism. It wasn't a thing. If you faced issues where you were picked on for being a woman, you just, the whole kind of goal was to just keep working. Don't let it show that it affects you. Don't succumb to it. Don't cry. Don't cry in front of people. You know, you can take it. Don't let them see that you can't take it. And that's like, when I was a commis chef, I came over to London for a little bit first, and there was a kitchen. I used to be so terrified to go in there. I'd go up the alley at the side before I'd work just to get sick before I went in there, because I used to be so terrified I'd mess something up or somebody would say something to me, because they were vicious. Like, people were really vicious back then. But thankfully, I've come out the other side of it, and I don't see that, nor do I tolerate that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And was it because it was particularly macho, you know, misogynistic?
Yeah.
Or was it just, look, this is the way kitchens are, survival of the fittest, get on with it?
Yeah, it was. But I think for me, what I experienced was, if you're a woman, they'd kind of throw more at you just to kind of get a reaction. And that's because you might have been one woman in a kitchen of 20 men. or at least 10 men anyway. Do you know, it's very rarely I've worked in kitchens, especially when I was a young chef, where you'd have more than 2-3 women in a kitchen. Mm. And a lot of the women that I had worked with were in pastry, and I didn't want to do pastry. I wanted to be stuck in the hot sections. I wanted to be in the grill with the other people to show that, you know, I can do this as well. I'm just as good as ye.
Yeah. How do you enforce that then? How do you really keep an eye on that? I mean, kitchens are frantic places. They are literally hot, you know, hot. You're under pressure. I don't think they'll ever be super relaxed just because of the relentless pressure, you know, to be on time, to keep things running on time, and to have expertise being demonstrated. You know, how do you manage to keep an eye over what people are saying to each other in the cut and thrust of a busy kitchen, particularly at your level?
Well, first and foremost, when somebody starts, I let them know, quite frankly, that there is a zero tolerance policy for sexism. You know, I can take and give jokes as much as anybody else, but when things are aimed at people personally, it's a very different situation. Mm. And if I see something that affects any of my team, I deal with it straight away. You know, a lot of people, especially with chefs, I don't know how it is in any other industry, but you're on the first couple of months, maybe 3 months or even 6 months, it's a probationary period. You know, if something bad happens, you can tell somebody to leave within that period and not have to give notice. So people know that, you know, this is a probationary period. You need to show that you are a good worker and you're a decent person and you're not looking for, I don't know, reactions, and you're not a bully, basically. Mm. So, yeah, it's zero tolerance. If I see it, good luck, you're gone. See you later.
Yeah. Is there a tradition of something called pantsed?
I mean, I never even heard of it before. I didn't even know if it was a thing. Mm. But yeah, I was pantsed. It's horrendous. Somebody would come up behind you and like just pull your pants down, your trousers, and then walk off in the middle of the kitchen. So that happened to me, I'd say, twice. But the second time it happened, I was prepared for it. So I wore tights underneath my trousers in like a 25 degree kitchen, because I was anticipating it. Like people, I won't say it, but they weren't very nice.
yeah.
But yeah, you kind of learn to avoid as well and deal with it. But as you go up through the ranks and you start to have a bit more seniority, you know, if somebody comes at you, I had to learn to kind of give a bite back just as hard, because that's the only way people would leave you alone. I don't know, like sometimes you'd have to kind of embarrass them more before they get a chance to embarrass you, so they don't do it again. Mm. It's a horrible way to work, but it worked for me, and people left me alone, and that's all I wanted, to be left alone and just do my work.
Yeah. And you get the opportunity now, as you say, to create a new way of doing things. And change people's expectations. So if they do leave your kitchen and they go to another kitchen, they have a fair idea of what's acceptable and what's not. And I think there's a lot of people listening who probably work in other industries that maybe are more male dominated, who have put up with this kind of behaviour, or maybe bullying in general, who can really relate to the effect that it can have on you, and are delighted that people like you are changing the way things are done. Tell us about the Murphia list. What is it and why are you on it?
Jesus, I don't know. The Murphia list. I don't know why I'm on it, but they run out of Irish people. So it's a list for top Irish people in hospitality in London. And I was, yeah, delighted to be added to it this year. It was a night of networking and just meeting people. But yeah, it was great. I don't know how good of an idea it is, throwing 100 Irish people into a free bar, but it was a good night.
I think you're very humble. You know, I don't know whether it's an Irish thing or just you in particular, but you know, your achievements are incredible. You're working in the best restaurants in the world. You're one of our greatest ever chef exports. You're on this Murphia list, which spotlights Irish movers and shakers in London's food and drink scene. And you know, where does that humility come from, do you think?
Catholic guilt, probably. I don't know. I don't know. I don't, as much as I kind of, my social media is basically just food memes and like human rights, but I don't really tend to big myself up that much because I'm just doing a job like anybody else, and I'm fortunate enough to be in a position that I can help other people coming up through the ranks with advice and, you know, kind of hopefully show them a path of how to be in kitchens and how to be in their job and how not to be, especially.
Yeah.
But it all comes to like respect, and I'm glad that I have an opportunity to do that. But I suppose I am a bit humble about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad thing. And have you any plans to come back and open a restaurant here, Christine? Because we need restaurants, and they're hard to keep open.
If any of your listeners have a spare couple hundred grand they want to throw my direction, I'd love to. But apart from that, I am planning. I'm in the early stages of planning my own restaurant. You know, I love London, and the food scene here can't be beaten. But I want to live by the coast again. I loved living. I lived in Galway for a couple of years, and I loved it. And I love the way of working in places like that. I want to have a more of a like eco-sustainable ethos in the running of my own place. You know, zero waste, kind of no single-use plastic, all that kind of stuff, and like a community hub, I suppose, something that kind of gives back as much as I take. So like working with local farmers and producers, artists, and I used to be involved in a way of working previously that was very much like that. And I think out of every job that I've had, this makes the most sense to me and how I want to work as a restaurateur myself. And to be honest, at this stage, it just kind of feels like a responsibility, especially the way the current climate is.
Yeah, I love it. Well, we're glad you're taking on that responsibility. And we hope you get back to our shores so we can just taste your wonderful creations. Christine Walsh, head chef of the Michelin-starred restaurant Chicharu in London. You can follow her on Instagram at BoggerChef. Thanks for talking to us, Christine.
Thank you very much. See you later.
Coming up in a few minutes, schools are getting woolly.
Email oliver@rte.ie.